Hi, hello. Welcome to this special live edition of the Dunker Spot. I am your host, Akai Snunkin, joined by Steve Jones Jr. as always. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How y'all doing?
I hope we're doing well. I would assume so. We have a special guest from ESPN on Around the Horn. Are you on PTI yet? You've been on SportsCenter, Around the Horn, The Jump.
I haven't cracked PTI. I'm not. I don't know if I'm old enough and stuff.
Outside the Lines.
Outside the, if I get to Outside the Lines, y'all know I'm up there to be serious. That's serious.
It's coming. Matter of time. It's coming.
Well, thanks, guys.
Of course, we have Monica McNutt with us to talk a little bit about the WNBA draft that just concluded like 45 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. I still don't quite understand why we get like a round of coverage and then it just kind of fast forwards. But
I will say that you start getting into tricky stick or not territory. And so I don't know that the payout on that investment is one that, yeah. I mean, we did get what, I forgot how long was it in actual show? 7 to 9, 7 to 10? No, 7 to 9. Yes, not 10 yet. So you got a full 2 hours, lots of time, tons of great features. But even in that first round, you heard Rebecca Lobo talking about it. Some of these teams don't actually have as many roster spots as draft picks as they've had. So it's, you know, the work is just beginning. Like tonight was cute, but very few of those girls are secure.
Makes sense. Well, let's talk about some of the ones that should be secure. At the top of the draft, we got Charlie Collier from Texas going to the Dallas Wings. How do you feel like she will fit in Dallas?
I'm curious to see what Dallas is going to look like under Vicky Johnson. This is has been an organization that has been in a little bit of tumultuous waters in the past few seasons in terms of leadership and players, kind of big name players in the league, voicing that they didn't necessarily feel like the organization had their back in their entire interest in terms of their whole being. So it's been in a little bit of change. However, last year they picked up Satu Sabli. Arika Egumawale is there. Bella Aleri is there as well. So they've got a lot of talent. And so I'm really curious to see how Vicky Johnson strings it all together. I mean, they got three picks in what? The top six picks of the tonight's draft. So it's going to be exciting.
How do you feel about the other two?
They got Awak and Dana, right? I think they got Dana.
They got Dana in the second round.
Oh.
They got Chelsea.
Chelsea in the first. Okay, so I have not seen Awak, but I'm super excited to see her play. I also think somebody's agency needs to lock her up to a modeling contract because she's gorgeous and, like, super model-esque. Chelsea, you know, so Chelsea and Dana in the same organization is really interesting because their games are very similar. And when you look at what they did in college at Arkansas and Louisville, respectively, their teams relied on them for a lot of the same things. I mean, Dana's a terrific three-point shooter. So is Chelsea. I think Dana is a little bit better catch and shoot behind the arc, but both of them are capable of creating off the bounce. And so they're very, very similar. So that's going to be an interesting battle because you already got Arike who has to have the ball in her hands to be great. I think they'll have fun spacing, and this will be a team that will get up and down the floor. Dana, I know, will put straps on and defend. I have not necessarily seen that as much from Chelsea. Obviously, I haven't seen Awak play. And Charlie, yes, is probably the most physically WNBA-ready character or selection, rather. But she's going to have to bang against some grown women at that position. And so even for her, there's going to be a learning curve on the defensive end for sure.
That was a question I had, because what Charlie did during the season stood out so much with the physicality, ducking in. Like, I'm going to post up, catch in the middle. How does that translate as she moves from college to the pros?
I think offensively it will translate, but it's not going to be a first move, right? When you look through the Big 12 slate, outside of, well, Baylor obviously was the best team out of that league. But when I think of that league, outside of her matching up with Tasha Mack when they played OSU, I can't think of anyone that kind of met her with size and strength, right? So the ducking is cool. I have this height advantage. I have the strength advantage. I know the double team is coming. I'm going to kick it to somebody on this roster, but at this level, the ducking may not be enough. Okay, fine, you ducked in, but you're still going up someone just as tall, just as strong, able to use their length and still defend. So I think the one thing that is really cool about Charlie's story, I actually called a couple of her games as a freshman. And at the time, Karen Aston was there. And I remember Karen saying, if she could ever get in shape and get her coordination down, she's going to be a beast. And so Charlie truly has worked to take her game to the next level. And I think this past year, I'm mixing up my coaches, not Gary Blair, Vic Schaefer, who is now at Texas. really kind of helped unlock her to the next level in terms of being in a system that best suited her.
Got it. Got it. How important is that outside shot development? Because she can shoot it out there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How key is that going to be for her as she navigates moving through the W?
I really think that's a system thing. I mean, it's great to have, right? Like if you're going to be a stretch five, stretch four, whatever the slot is. But I think it's really a system thing. And again, I can remember Vicky Johnson, the player. I'm not sure her philosophy as a coach. She's surrounded by a ton of shooters. So in this particular situation in Dallas, it may not be as much of a big deal unless they want to put her in some pick and pop action to kind of keep the paint clear. Because three of the guards I can think of off the top can get to the paint. And obviously Satu's great in that mid-range game as well. So I'm not super concerned with that for Charlie. I think she has it and she shows a great work ethic so she can continue to add to it. But system-wise, I don't know that that's going to be a big deal for her as a rookie.
Do you have a comp for Charlie right now?
She reminds me of, and I can see this child's face and I cannot call her name, from Baylor. She played in L.A. They won a national title together. Lauren Cox and then her running mate that year at Baylor. Why can I not call this child's name? Kalani Brown, yeah. So there's some Kalani Brown there, but obviously they are two younger players. A little bit more veteran speed comp for Charlie. The duck-in reminds me a little bit of Sylvia Fowles, but Charlie's got a ways to go to have the complete game that Syl has. Mm-hmm. But I think some you see some of that in terms of her ability to duck in and be a presence in the paint. There's a little bit of Tina Charles there for me. And I think those two pieces, of obviously those two are Olympians, so she's got, that's a high ceiling. But mm-hmm. in terms of someone who she could project to follow. And then well, Candace has so much more of a mid-range game and the ability to shoot. I know that's someone that Charlie has been very forthright about admiring. But yeah, Candace's game is a lot more well-rounded than Charlie's right now.
Fair enough. Moving a little bit later in the draft, still in the first round. Ari McDonald, star of the NCAA tournament.
Ari! Nikai, you didn't see her thing?
It's a whole thing.
It was a whole thing.
In the background. It was right there.
See, was trying to set that up. So you
apparently, her fiance was in the way. These young people different because wow, that's y'all early in the game.
Ari McDonald, she goes 3 to Atlanta. I was surprised by the pick. Am I alone in that? Because I love that for her. Like I think she is like a top 3, top 5 talent in this year's draft. No question. But I kind of question the fit with Atlanta in particular. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I was surprised she went that high. She had a tremendous tournament, and I'm not taking anything away from Ari, but she's a small guard that was a high-volume scorer. And so will there be that many shots available for her to be as effective at the next level? Now, what you can hang your hat on is baby girl going to lock you up 94 feet. Like, let's go. You know what I mean? And I think that gives her an advantage and is part of the reason why Atlanta probably went there. But I'm thinking even of that roster, and that's one of the rosters that had a lot of turnover. Kennedy Carter, though, volume. Courtney Williams. I do love the defensive energy that the two of them could hook up together. I was surprised by that selection. I agree with you, Nikias. She went higher than I thought she would have, considering how she's able to be successful at Arizona.
So if you're the head coach there, how do you dole out those rotation minutes? Like, who do you pair together between them?
I think you got to figure out the flow. Kennedy had a really eye-opening year last year, and then she got hurt. Right? Let me get all my years together. Then she did battle a little bit of some injuries there. So I just think you got to roll the ball out in training camp and folks got to figure it out. I don't know. I'm not sure how that's going to work in Atlanta. But the other part of it is you would think that your first 10 are probably going to be secure in their roster. So it may not be something that we see May 14th when the season opens. It may take a little bit of time to develop. But one thing you know you can get from Ari is someone that's going to come in and give you defensive energy. And we saw it last year with Taya Cooper. And the Sparks, like, they relied on her to come in with that defensive energy and spots. And by the end of the season, she was pretty much a rotational player. So same kind of deal can happen for Ari.
Well, Was the Aaron McDonald pick the biggest surprise in the first round for you, or did you have another selection there?
I think the biggest surprise for me was Kaiser Gondrejic going four, but I am not mad at it. And I will say, I didn't do a ton of checking out the mock drafts. The thing that's unique about the WNBA draft is the names we know may not be the best fits. Right. And so these coaches and scouts are really digging on a next level. I mean, the four chicks that went internationally, I can't tell you nothing about them. I'm not even going to try to play you. Like, I'm excited to see them play. But Kaiser, obviously, the couple of boards that I did look at was not picked that high. But I am a huge fan of Kaiser. Like, I'm biased to big guards that can get in the paint, can throw their weight around. I called a couple of her games at West Virginia as well. And just between this season and last season, she dropped like 25 pounds or something. I don't know if it was something about the cute girls on Instagram was, you know, in their bags this offseason during COVID, like losing weight. Because she and Chelsea did the same thing. And I didn't know Chelsea dropped 30 pounds. But Kaiser really worked on her body this summer. And I think it showed. She was a lot quicker this year. I remember last year calling one of her games. She hit some crazy, like, end of the game buzzer beater shot, bounces off the back iron, falls in. But not only was she the point guard of the squad for Mike Carey, but she's a gamer. Like, Kaiser looks to make big time plays. And again, she's a big guard. She can score at all three levels. I really like that pick, but I know it shocked a lot of people.
Certainly shocked me. You got something, mm-hmm. Steve?
I had a quick question because I think it's interesting. When we think about drafts, we usually think about the talent, what a team is adding. Fit is way more important in this one because of the rosters and the roster spots that are there. And I think it's kind of tough maybe for sometimes people to get their heads around that because you got to find someone who you can know you can put in the rotation,
yeah,
as opposed to, you know, maybe the reaches that we've known in the draft or just drafting purely off talent.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, the Chinay's documentary, shout out to Chinay Gumuke, is 144, but that represents the literal amount of spots, 12 teams by 12 spots. And so there is, one, there's less time to figure it out, right? Like, you need to get in, make your impression, do you fit or not? And I think there's two kind of cuts in the WNBA season. Now, what we have seen is players get in, make enough of an impression, and they may not stick with the same team, but they get picked up. We saw that in Connecticut with Natisha Heidemann, and actually she ended up having a really good run with Connecticut. We've seen it with a couple of Mystics players as well. But the fit is imperative, Steve. Like, there's not enough room. There's no two-way option. Like, there's not enough room for you to take up space and not produce, period, point blank. You know what I mean? And so, Elena Beer was my colleague on ACC Network for an entire season, and now we're working on some different projects. And I was actually talking with her and Tisha Pinachero last week. And the W is so unique because it's a short season, a short prep. If you can't get in and do your thing, we don't have time. We just don't have time to wait. And so I think when I look at the players that went in that first round in particular, they know what they do well already. If that makes sense? Or at least they know where they can excel. I almost feel like a player that does it all is going to kind of struggle to find their way because I can do so many different things. Ari, you could score in college cute, but what we know you can do and it's going to work for us is you're going to strap up. You're going to play defense. Charlie, all right, we need you to get on this glass and rebound. Like, we're not even tripping off you offensively right now. Right now, you need to rebound and figure out how to defend at the WNBA level. Like, Chelsea, you can shoot threes. You can get to the free throw line. You're going to make these free throws in this 10 minutes a game that you're going to play, and so on and so forth. So it's all about fit. And that's not a slight. I think people were kind of surprised that Dana slipped and Arella slipped and Natasha Mack slipped. It's all about fit. It's less about those girls and more about the teams that were on the board at that point.
No, that's a really interesting dynamic. And I'm glad you touched on it because you got to have something that we can go to. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no searching. There's no, hey, maybe you could do X, Y, and Z because I got another option.
Yeah,
you can do that. I know what I got. So yep. That's a very interesting point when you think about WNBA draft versus NBA draft. I'm glad we talked about it.
It's a great point because my next question was going to be like, how did Renia Davis fall tonight? Like, how does Minnesota keep doing this is the better question.
So that's it. Like, Cheryl Reeve got that secret sauce. Y'all playing checkers. She playing chess. Like, and I remember last year when Crystal Dangerfield fell and she was like, Crystal Dangerfield, please. And she went on to be Rookie of the Year. Again, it's fit. And when I think of some of the players that went off the board before Renia, the biggest thing that stands out, either they had size or they shot the three better. But again, Renia is sort of one of those utilitarian, I could do a little bit of everything, but I'm not 100% sure what she does well. Now, the beauty of her fit in Minnesota is Cheryl Reeve Simone Augustus, Sylvia Fowles, Crystal Dangerfield, Nafisa Collier, they're going to teach her how to be a pro, right? And so we're going to find how you fit in this system. So any rookie that goes out to Cheryl Reeve, I mean, I know she's a tough coach, but you're going to get groomed.
All right, so outside of the first round, who would you say was your favorite fit?
Okay, let me pull my draft all the way up here. I liked down up top. Dejanay Carrington stands out just because I'm a fan of hers. But where did she actually end up going? I know she went later.
She went to Connecticut.
I liked that. I actually really liked Destiny Slocum to Las Vegas. And then I think Natasha Mack to Chicago is going to be interesting because she now has an opportunity to learn from Candace Parker. Now, granted, their games are different, but in terms of being a big and blocking shots at this level, I think that's a unique fit for Natasha. And, you know, they've got, golly, my names tonight. I'm just so terrible with my names, but I can't think Cooper. No, Cooper's not there anymore. They got a big girl in the paint who I love, and she's just one that just is willing to just go and bang and keep it simple. Dejanay Carrington, two-way player. She can score. She's also going to be willing to defend. You put her alongside a Jasmine Thomas in terms of sitting down and defending. Jonquel Jones is back for the Connecticut Sun. Kurt Miller, I think, is another one of those coaches that does a great job at grooming players. They're going to be like, here, we need you to go in, defend, maybe best player, maybe second best player. And she's a player that can generate her offense from her defense. That's just kind of what Baylor did. We saw that with Dede Richards as well. And then Destiny Slocum, I actually remember Slocum when she was at Maryland before she transferred to Oregon State. She's just steady. And, you know, Bill Laimbeer and those guys, they're going to get up and down the floor. She gets to work with De'Erica Hamby, Asia Wilson, and Liz Cambages coming back. And she won't be the starting point guard. But as a point guard, that's pretty simple, right? Like, I got all these weapons. Let me just do my job. And so those were three that kind of stood out to me.
Helps that she can also shoot the ball a little bit.
Yeah, just a tad. Might light that thing up. Might light that thing up. Spacing is good.
Guys, they as good as they were last year, and as good as their offense was last year, Mike Frey actually wrote a great piece about how they were able to have an elite offense despite not having that three-point shooting out there. Three-point shooting is so important, and it just kind of frustrated to be watching them at times.
Well, last year, but I mean, not everybody has an MVP, though, either.
That's true.
You know what I mean? So, like, and then the two-time sixth woman of the year prior to her injury, and De'Erica Hamby, like, they played ugly ball. Bill Laimbeer is the bad boy. Like, it kind of makes sense.
That it does. Where are you at on the Kiana Williams fit in Seattle?
She's got a great opportunity to learn. I don't see her getting no minutes. Keep it a buck. Sorry.
Quick to the point.
She's not going to play outplay Jordan Canada. Like, when Jewel Lloyd decides to slide over, nope, not happening. Sue Bird's still out there. Nope. And knock on all the wood, everybody stays healthy. Now, that has been interesting in Seattle. They've been hit by the injury bug, which allow people to get valuable minutes. But that's an opportunity for her to learn and grow. Her best play is to be a nuisance of pain in the butt in practice and help make everybody else better, and therefore she's going to get better too. But again, I'm biased to big guards, and Kiana Williams falls in that small guard category.
Fair enough. Steve, I thought you were about to jump in.
Oh, no, I was going to say something about you and the Aces, but I'll let it pass. Don't worry about it.
No, don't let it pass. Don't let it pass.
Definitely the prototype of a team that Nikias cannot appreciate, but that's okay.
You're a finesse guy? You're like a pretty ball guy?
Oh, I wouldn't even say that.
No? Okay.
what does the Nikias team look like?
No defense.
Wait, whole
lot of ball movement. Whole lot of action.
I do see you tweeting about lots of screens and actions, bro. Like, that is you do enjoy that.
I do enjoy the actions, but like, no defense. I don't know about that.
Bro. I don't know.
My only job here is to get you to appreciate a gross, slow-paced defensive team. Once I do that, I'm good.
I have been watching the Miami Heat play basketball for a very long time.
Oh, Miami Heat caught a stray.
Are you at appreciate it yet, though, or just watch, tolerate?
No. I love watching the play. Like, Eric Spoelstra is one of the best defensive coaches ever. Like, I like the way they jump things up. So I
jump it up.
I have that experience. Yeah.
That's a good question, though. Why did Arella fall so far?
Ooh.
Because I thought she... To me, what I've seen is she's a bucket.
Let me see.
She is a bucket.
Hold on, let me see. Going back to my first answer on fit, Arella went, she went 10 in round two. Who's in front of her? Funny enough, I actually thought Stephanie Watts went entirely too high, and that should have been Arella in my mind. Let me see who's in front of her. I don't know these foreign kids. Yeah, the only person. Yeah, to me, Arella's spot was when Stephanie Watts went, but that's just my personal opinion. And I covered the ACC. I think Arella brings far more consistency and energy. Okay, why did she fall though? I gotta fall back on fit. Maybe these coaches, I don't know. Now let's put this disclaimer out there. Natasha Cloud tweeted about this tonight, and it's so true. First, second, third in a W, while it holds weight, it doesn't necessarily hold the same weight again that we're accustomed to on the men's side. Again, if Arella gets to camp and dogs it, then the first round pick didn't, like, that's that. You know what I mean? And so I think every athlete tonight says, okay, this is my first step. My foot is in the door. Nobody really is guaranteed, even Charlie, you know what I mean? So I'm not super alarmed. She got in, and that's the most important part. But I don't know why she fell. I don't have a good answer for that.
I can't say that I understand it either. That's a good point.
That sidestep is crazy. I'm just saying.
The snake tattoo, yeah. The whole thing behind it, like her vibe, her energy, and in non-tangibles that I think should matter. She's coming from a C. Vivian Stringer system. Like, C. Vivian produces basketball people, basketball-minded people that understand how to be pros. And that's sort of the running joke in the league in terms of what programs produce kids that know versus kids you got to teach.
Last question for you before we transition off the draft. What was your favorite moment from this year's draft?
Oh, definitely Grandma Onionware, and Renaya, because, you know. Or it was Holly flexing in French was like a moment, because I mess up English, and she like smooth went to French. I was like, oh. And then I was like, there's no way that she learned that just for this. Like, she has to know it, right? Grandma was a great moment. It reminds me of all of my African friends and their families, because she was full head to toe, the dress, the dance, the whole bit. I think Renaya was really cool because, you know, I think Renaya was probably the first player that we saw that was kind of sweating in terms of where she fell in the draft. And I love tonight, but even like Dana Evans couldn't hide the fact that she was disappointed, you know, with how low she fell. I thought Jasmine Walker was really cool. She's like, I can't even talk right now. I'm just so. And what was cool about that was Magic retweeting and welcoming them. I'm like, I'm not even getting drafted and I would be spazzing. Like, I would totally be spazzing. But I definitely think Grandma stole the cake in terms of moments tonight.
Grandma said, this is my time to shine.
Hello? Hello. Y'all about to get this praise dance. That's my baby up there.
I know that's right. That is a black relative for you.
Hello. Please hold your applause till the end of the ceremony. Insert Grandma. Like, you shove your applause warnings.
Woo. Shout out Jasmine Watkins, elite tweeter.
A great tweeter.
Oh, man. Okay, so we obviously don't know who's going to make these rosters from this year's draft, but based on the roster that we have right now in the W, who would you peg as the contenders heading into the season?
Washington, Las Vegas, Seattle, and I actually think the Chicago team is going to be very, very dangerous. I know our brilliant folks that did draft coverage tonight, a lot of folks are picking Minnesota, and that's cool. I don't think that that's entirely wrong, but I don't think enough people are talking about the Chicago team with the addition of CP3.
Steve, where are you at?
I think the Storm, I wouldn't doubt them. I think the Mystics should elevate back to a level that we've seen them play at.
And so will.
Those are probably my top two right now. If I had to pick a sleeper, I think the Liberty would be better than people think.
Dang, sleeper is sleeper to contend. They're going to be better, but they're not there. No, they're entirely too young. I don't even know who all's on their roster that's been in the league more than 4 years outside of Leja Clarendon, and I'm not even sure that they are there still.
I think Natasha Howard would have to put together like the greatest season.
She don't handle the ball. Exactly. And she don't handle the ball. Now, what I will say is they're going to get up and down the floor, baby. They zipping, ripping, and running. Sabrina's back. Knock on all the wood, say your prayers, all that good stuff that are at Asia Durr can get healthy. I haven't heard any updates since she shared about her battles with COVID. Jocelyn Willoughby there. Willoughby is there. Jasmine Jones is there. I'm not sure Kylie Sugar is still on that roster. But that one thing they do now is get up and down that floor. That's for sure.
What about the Mercury?
So I was having this conversation the other day with Camille Buqueda, W Slam. Shout out to Camille. I think it is time for the Mercury to do something. There's too much name and firepower there for it to just be empty. I think Sandy Brondello is a terrific coach. Skylar Diggins and Diana Taurasi seem to have a great rapport. BG, when she's locked in, still is like one of the forces of the league. Obviously, last year she left the bubble with personal reasons. But just between those three, I feel like you should never look that team off. And they've got some really great young pieces as well. I might lean there as a sleeper because less people are talking about them. And I do think we're not discounting anything from mental health and wellness, but they've struggled to kind of put it together. I don't know how much the bubble affected them. You know, that whole experience obviously weighed on people differently. But that's a team that should be in the conversation healthy if everybody's healthy.
Speaking of the health, because both of you mentioned the Mystics, do we have updates on Emma Mieseman or Elena Delladon at this point?
Elena's returning. Tina Charles is returning. I last check, and I need to double check, I do not think Emma Mieseman will be back this year.
Because I think that's the only reason why I wouldn't have the Mystics in that class, just not knowing between those three. Because when they're fully there.
Elena and Tina are there. Elena and Tina are back. Emma is hemmed up in international COVID something something last time I checked.
Gotcha.
I remember that coming down about a month ago, maybe a little bit before that. So we may need to double check that. But now they did lose. Ariel Powers is now in Minnesota. But I just think Myesha Hines-Allen showed an ability that we didn't even know she really had last year in the bubble. And so I'm curious to see how Mike Thibeault stirs that entire pot, because she has earned minutes and consistent minutes to be on this squad. They lost some of the role players, definitely look different. And Alicia Clark, who came over from Seattle, is not playing the season. She had foot surgery. But Elena Delladon and Tina Charles, like, say less. Let's go. Ariel Atkins is still there. Let's go.
Is there a team that may be getting a little bit of hype or praise that you are having a little bit of pause with?
So I've heard some folks pick Minnesota as their sleeper. As much as I love Cheryl Reeve, I don't know if Kayla McBride was underutilized in Las Vegas or if she's just not a top tier one. So that'll be curious to see, because, you know, sometimes great coaching, you can get a wet paper bag to play outstanding defense if you like that as a coach. But I also think that it's very real sometimes that our favorite collegiate athletes, their games don't necessarily translate to the W. And so I'm curious, is that the case with Kayla, or does she need a change of scene and to be looked at as a top gun on a roster? Because to me, if you could play, you could play. And Vegas obviously had a lot of horses. And maybe she just wasn't the top horse on that roster. That's okay, too. But even when Kelsey Plum went down, it didn't seem like they consistently went through her. Now, granted, she played alongside an MVP in Asia Wilson this past year. And then when Liz is on the floor, like, you got to find her, too. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what Minnesota looks like.
I think there was definitely, like, an interesting push and pull between, like, Kayla McBride's usage last year. One of the underrated subplots of that Aces season, and they made it all the way to the finals, is that they were trying to figure out how to use Kayla, and she was also in the middle of, I think, her worst shooting season, which drives a lot of the offensive value that she had for the Aces team that didn't have many movement shooters on the roster.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how she's going to fit there. I'm just thinking with Minnesota, like, I wonder how Nafisa Collier is going to – I wonder what her next step is, because she's one of those players that does a little bit of everything. So I wonder if she's going to have more of an offensive role this year, or how they fit all those pieces in alongside her.
So don't forget, though, a lot of what we saw from Minnesota last year in terms of them being competitive and fighting and being in a position we didn't think was going to happen was without Sylvia Fowles, who's still a beast, like aging like fine wine, baby, still a beast. So, I'm curious to see what that roster healthy looks like. I think Nafisa is on a tremendous track. She gets to run alongside her fellow UConn Husky and Crystal Dangerfield. I think even the one silver lining on the injuries probably last year is that your young players had to play. They had to grow. They were baptized by fire. So I can't at this point now, I haven't seen Kayla McBride be a bucket truly since Notre Dame. So I don't know. I can't remember how efficient she is or isn't. And you know, when you got somebody that needs a bunch of shots to get a bunch of shots, and you got a system that has been pretty balanced that moves the ball, it's a little oil and water there. So there's a lot to see in terms of what's going to happen in Minnesota.
We got you. One last WNBA question before we transition to some NBA talk. We got a lot of new jerseys out. A lot of new jerseys out.
Fire what jerseys.
I don't know. I messed up the Rebel, the Heroine, and the whatever. But I actually got a jersey today from the league. I think this is New York. This one is fire. We love what it stands for.
Quick flex right here.
You just people see you on screens or whatever. They start sending you stuff. I like it. I need to stay here more often.
It's a strong flex.
Yeah. So, I got a Sabrina jersey. Look at that. Hey. So yeah, do love this one. We love a good equality message. And you know, the women of W obviously put their money where their mouth is. My favorite though was the Phoenix joint that has the vibes and the different colors of the sunset.
The orange and purple, right?
Yeah. That's been my favorite. I like jerseys that we thought about. DC's Washington's Rise joint, I think it was special. That was really unique. Might pull that up out of my own pocket, even if somebody don't send it my way. And I actually really thought the Connecticut Sun joint, that where they have sun written in the Mohegan language,
was really cool.
A really dope ode to the Mohegan culture. I hope I'm getting all my words right. And where they play up in Connecticut and that tribe. I think those were the Aces have very crisp, clean joints. I'm not mad at that, but they weren't necessarily my favorite. I think the Los Angeles joint with the palm tree is sort of a throwback to when I fell in love with the league, you know, the old Sparks jerseys. The Phoenix joint and the Rise joint were my favorites. I know Indiana's was like Stranger Things or something. I don't follow Stranger Things, so somebody had to tell me that. I kind of missed it. Those are my favorites.
Where are you at, Steve?
I liked Seattle's. Seattle's black one was my favorite one.
Okay, that one is cold.
I just like the clash. It just feels like Seattle. And then I like the Aces red.
Yeah.
I went to UNLV, so...
The Aces ones are like the same in different colors, though.
Yeah, there's not a lot of pizzazz, but that red is popping.
The red is okay. But red looks good on the melanin. You know what I'm saying? We stand a little red. We love it.
Very nice. Now, I would definitely go with the Suns jersey that you mentioned earlier. I just like the entire Chicago Sky rollout, honestly.
Theirs are good.
Those are very Chicago clean. I'm impartial to the Aces jerseys. They are very crisp.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm missing a very obvious one.
Atlanta? Who else? Dallas? I can't remember. Dallas weren't that memorable for me, so I can't really. Phoenix?
Minnesota?
Seattle, Minnesota, yeah.
Like that Minnesota clean, did have some good ones.
The white one from Minnesota was very sharp.
There we go. Let's transition into some Knicks talk, which is, I think, the reason Steve is here.
My guys, wait, Steve, are you here to be positive or negative? What are we doing here?
I am positive on the Knicks. There's someone here who has not been as positive on the Knicks. I'm not naming any names.
It's fine. It's all good.
I don't know if that's fair. What is the biggest surprise for you from this Knicks team?
Julius Randle. Because last year when Drew got the spinning around, I was like, oh God. And so this year we see spinning less. And I just really think he's elevated his game. Like, we get pieces from players in the Players Tribune often, and it's great. But I think when he talks about wanting to take pride in being here, and just the work that he put in the offseason, the numbers bear it out. So I've been really impressed with his focus, I guess is what you would call it. Because I think to still be putting up those numbers, you know, triple-doubles, like, it's sort of casual at this point in the season. On this team, you know, obviously the back half of the season has been a little bit more challenging. He's been my most pleasant surprise as an all-star. Shout out to Drew.
From a scheme perspective, what have you noticed in terms of his usage that's different from last year to this year?
I don't know if it's so much him versus everybody else. I think last year's team was real thirsty.
That's a good descriptor.
You know what I mean? Like, people know that we don't necessarily have direction. Like, all right, let me get this off so at least I'm going to get traded. Like, I can show my value. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think that there was confidence. And this year, this group seems to really draw their confidence from what they're able to do on the defensive side of the ball, which is crazy because the roster hasn't changed a ton, but Tibbs has stabilized. And I think Tibbs, in concert with what Drew was able to do in the offseason, you got two of your biggest pieces when this team comes up that are far more stable, far more confident, Drew in himself and in his teammates, and Tibbs in his system. Now, we have had conversations down the stretch whether or not minutes are getting a little out of hand this late in the season. But I think for me, under the new structure in my mind, the 10th seed is playoffs, which would be a place the Knicks haven't been in a minute. So let's get it. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that just does something for not just the fan base, but for the confidence of this team. Because they know. They hear. Like, they know. And I think they've taken a lot of pride in shedding some of the negativity that surrounds the organization.
No, well, that consistency from Julius Randle has stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. He had the hot start, and you're wondering what's going to happen when teams lock in on him. He starts playmaking. You know, the double teams make sense, and he's making plays. He's bringing it on both ends of the floor.
Yep.
He gets you those post-ups. He can face up. He can do everything you need.
And that little fadeaway?
Woo!
He's doing something this year.
It reminds me of another left-handed power forward that I've seen before. A little Zeebo-ish, but...
Ah, nice. Good comp.
A little bit. It's sacrilegious to say, but it is. What do you think about just his consistent growth? Because this guy has been a dog all year, no matter what.
So he tells this story. He tells it and he probably wrote about it, about being a rookie with Kobe Bryant. And how he pulled up to Houston as a rookie and about to go play with my team. I mean, go shout out with my people, kick it. And Kobe's like, we're going to the gym. And of course, Julius is like, well, you don't tell Kobe no. So we went to the gym. And so I think you never know. It's kind of like us in this industry, right? Like, you never know when the timing is right, when the seed going to sprout, all that good stuff. I think that's kind of what we're seeing here. Drew obviously battled injuries early in his career. But how many guys get to say that they were a rookie alongside Kobe Bryant? You know what I mean? And so I think some of those things are starting to take hold. Mind you, this dude has been highly touted since middle school. So it's not that the talent wasn't there. But, you know, you talk to great basketball people, what is it, 80% mental and 20% ability? And so I think now, you know, he's getting to a place where he's finally starting to put it together. And I don't mean, I know 30 is like old in NBA years, but he's still a relatively young dude. He hasn't hit 30 yet. And so I just think we're seeing someone mature right before our eyes. He's talked a lot about, you know, how his son has changed his lens in terms of how he operates as a player because his son is watching him. And I get we're talking things away from basketball, but all of that is so powerful, especially as we continue to acknowledge that athletes are far more than just the game and the jersey that they put on. So I think he takes a lot of pride in it. And he said to me, we did a couple of events for some fans, and he's like, you know, we're doing things the right way. And the one thing we can all say, whatever level of hoop we got to, you know when you're in some nonsense and you know when people are trying to do things the right way. And I think that that shows.
Yeah, perfect timing. Tibbs being able to embrace him needing what Tibbs brings to the table. Mm-hmm. I think it just kind of worked in marriage and it worked out well.
It's a good fit for sure.
What have you seen from RJ Barrett this year? I've been pretty impressed with the recent, like, really, it's like been a 2.5-3 month stretch from him to where the shots started to come together.
Would you like to make the case for him being 25 under 25 on that list, or would?
He should be in that range. I feel like.
Oh, you're not putting him under 25, though.
Like, I would have to. You, Steve, set me up. But I have to have the list in front of me.
I was about to say I don't have the list in front of me either. I just know he was tight because he ain't make it, and I'm not mad at him.
Like, he's starting to put it together this year. Like, it was always kind of silly to write him off after that rookie season in which he basically played in a phone booth.
Yeah.
And had to run point guard because who was the point guard in New York last year?
Again, a whole bunch of confusion. Tibbs has come and stabilized. But to RJ's credit, I think he's worked on his jumper. That's the biggest leap, right? Like, that was the knock on him coming in. He's always been able to get to the rim and power through contact, which I think was one of the most impressive things about his game, even in as a rookie. But again, like, he's young. And I know that we've got young guys that come in and do great things, but he's not Zion. Like, he's not Zion. He's not Ja. He's the third pick out of that class. And it doesn't mean to me that he doesn't have tremendous upside. I've been impressed with his shooting flat out, because that was the thing last year. Like, ooh, you got to be able to knock down some shots to keep the defense honest. But again, it's tough for me to separate any one thing that anybody is doing on this team apart from the entire team. I think the confidence that Jrue is playing with has helped RJ, right? Like, Jrue is making plays. His triple doubles are assists. You know what I mean? He's finding RJ. RJ's like, oh, y'all talking trash? Oh, Anthony Edwards, you wanted to leave me open? Oh, y'all left me off this top 25 list? Oh, I wasn't all rookie team? Like, I think he's legitimately internalized that, and the work has shown itself. Like, for him to be, I'm not sure what he's shooting percentage-wise, but I know at one stretch last week, like, that corner three, I don't know why people kept leaving him open. He was knocking it down like it was nothing. So I'm confident that he's shooting better from behind the arc. And he's built for the NBA. Like, he's got a great physique. He's just got to continue to get better.
Fair enough. Where are you at on the rookie class for the New York Knicks?
I love IQ, Emmanuel Quigley. I also love Obi. I'm not sure if I feel like this is a curve thing happening for Obi, or if he hasn't quite been used just right. Not that I'm smarter than Tibbs, but I just wonder. And I think, you know, one of my questions for Obi is like, was what spot is he going to guard coming out? And I think we've seen that kind of be part of the equation. He doesn't shoot the ball well enough to be on the wing. He's not quite big and physical enough to be, you know, trying to make things happen back to the basket. And I know I go back and forth with fans a bunch, because they're like, why are they just using him on the wing to rotate the ball? Like, put him in a pick and roll, blah, blah, blah. And I get it. And maybe there is room for a little bit more creativity just to experiment. But again, big picture, this team's trying to get back to playoffs contention. So there's not a ton of room to experiment. He didn't get a traditional offseason in terms of Vegas. Like, they're not going to put him on a two-way deal. So I hope that they don't write him off, because I think there is more there. This season, though, on the cusp of doing something that hasn't been done for this organization, there's just not a lot of wiggle room to play around and figure it out when you got other guys that have been productive relatively consistently.
Well, yeah, and I don't think the roster really allows him to do some of the other things that he can. You know, when you have to play four and you're with another big, you can't be in pick and roll as much because it's mm-hmm. probably a switch. Mm-hmm. So you might not be in dribble handoffs as much because it's probably a switch. Mm-hmm. And you may not be playing with the guards that allow you to roll like you would and showcase that ability. So it's kind of like it's good that he's playing. You know, at least he's getting the minutes. That mm-hmm. says something, but I think it's more of a, does the roster fit him? Can he find his right position? Just a kind of a bad mix with a successful team. But he's bought in, you know?
Yeah, and he has a great attitude. He's got a great spirit about him. He's a great kid. What I am happy about for him this year is I think he does have an opportunity to glean good habits. And we keep talking about the stability that Tibbs has shown. And I've heard, you know, athletes talk about it, former athletes talk about it, both in the NFL and the NBA. Like, those formative years, those first couple of rookie years, if you're in a bad spot, you can pick up so many bad habits if you're not mindful. And so, at least to me, if, you know, we can get him a full offseason, if there's some sort of summer league back, like, there's room. I think he's a kid that's willing to work to develop his game, to figure out how to fit. And if ultimately it's not with the Knicks, he's still going to have to develop his game, because there's very few spots that, as he currently is constructed, he would demand major minutes on the floor across the league. He's got to do a little bit more. He needs a little bit more versatility. So I'm glad that he at least is under Tibbs, who's respected and has the same plan, pretty good ball.
Right. A quick IQ question for you before we move. If he's running pick and roll, he's able to go against that drop. He has the floater down already. Mm-hmm. What do you think is more important for his development beyond the floater? Is it getting all the way to the rim, or is it developing that pull-up three because he has the touch for it?
Oh, man, he's little. I guess he's going to have to be the three, I think. I think I'm leaning on a three. He's not that big. I mean, I shouldn't say he's little. He's not little, but he's slight. Like, he's thin. And so in terms of longevity, I don't know. I mean, he's not also going to try to attack the rim like Ja and dunk on somebody's head. But I think that three, I think, keeps him a little bit more honest. Because to me, from that three, if you at least get people jumping and biting, he can give me that second dribble and make another move, or he can give me a pass off of that. I think once you get in amongst the trees, your options become far more limited.
Steve, did you have anything?
I was going to say, who's the matchup for the Knicks?
What do you mean? In the playoffs?
What do you want in the playoffs? Who do you want to see?
Ooh, chill. What seed we getting? We getting, you got to get to 7 or we got to play the play-in? Oh, God.
Y'all at 6 right now. So I'm thinking Philly, Brooklyn, or Milwaukee. One of those three.
Dang.
And I'm on record. I think if they get to the 4-5, they can win. They can win. They can win a series. I do.
A series?
I think they can win a series in the 4-5.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Y'all got to help me because I'm terrible with these maths and these new numbers and this new thing. If they stay at 6, they will play a winner of a play-in?
No, they'll be in. They're in.
Yeah, but in their first round, like, who would they get?
They play Milwaukee.
They would get the 3.
Mm-hmm.
Something about me wants them to have Philly as opposed to Milwaukee.
Ooh.
So I just think about the games in a regular season, and they get up for Philly for whatever reason. Like, there's been some really close games with Philly. Something about that, and then I feel like Joel might flop around and stub his toe and, like, maybe not be available. something would rather me have them deal with Philly as opposed to Milwaukee. Okay. Do I buy Milwaukee, though? That's interesting that I just said that. I think I like the way that the Knicks have played Philly. But in terms of a team in the East that's poised to do more damage, I do think that Doc is a better coach and has Philly, you know, get into a place that they really want to be. We got to see if the Drew Holiday joint really means what it was supposed to mean for Milwaukee. I don't know that I'm 100% sold.
All right, so let's go there then. Talk okay. of the East, you got Brooklyn, you got Philadelphia, you got Milwaukee. Power rank them for you.
Brooklyn, as it stands, I think. Brooklyn, Philly, and Milwaukee. I do appreciate that, and I think, Nikias, you may have brought this to my attention on Twitter earlier this season, because I was one of the people like, what's wrong with Milwaukee? They look stupid and uninterested. Like, yeah, Giannis had 40, but they almost lost. Like, what are they doing? And I think, you know, smarter basketball minds than me, that's why you hang out with smart basketball people, pointed out that they are, you know, doing the opposite of what they've done in the past, because the regular season has meant squat, and you know what I mean? But now we're getting into that window of, all right, it's time to get in gear. So I don't know if they've done enough. Like, and funny enough, today on multiple ESPN Radio, Janae Golick, or on my podcast, multiple folks are now again, hey, Giannis has to be in the MVP conversation. Look at the numbers and look at where Milwaukee is. Okay, that's fine, but I don't really care. Like, he signed that big deal so that they can get over the hump in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I think that the East is the Nets to lose. Like, I never bought in on that lame chemistry argument. I thought it was cute for people to say, oh, there's only one basketball. Oh, you heard that? That's nice. But that's dumb. These were three guys that came together, each having already had the experience of playing with a big time star. Mm-hmm. Two already have won national championships, already have won titles, and one has been a scoring champ and is so desperate to have some help. Like, y'all thought they didn't have no basketball IQ as a collective? Like, what is wrong with y'all?
So are you worried about the defense at all?
No, because offense is the point of the game. Like, they just need one more point. Like, fine. The score is going to be 189 to 190, but they're going to have the one more point. Like, it's fine.
Fair enough. I feel like I'm just the resident Bucks guy at this point. Like, I have been hammering that they have been experimenting on both ends of the floor. Okay. I've written about Giannis's MVP case.
Okay.
He's obviously missed a ton of games recently, just got back. I think he's playing pretty well since he's been back.
Okay.
I still believe in them to get out of the East. Like, I know that's a minority take, but
that's his pick. That's his pick.
I don't. And so earlier this year, Jay Will and I were having this conversation too. Because at one point I was kind of like, are we not talking about the Bucks enough? This for me, Nikias, I think if the Bucks defense is somehow incredible, right? And it may be. I haven't paid them close enough attention, so I'm not going to act like I have. Incredible enough to slow the firepower in Brooklyn, fine. But they are not constructed to outscore Brooklyn. And I don't like, you can hope to contain but not stop when it comes to Brooklyn. Somebody's going to get off.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, Chris Middleton, Holiday, Giannis, Bobby Portis, Lopez, like, this is great team basketball. But maybe now, more than even a few years ago, we're in an era of, like, superstars. And the Nets just have more superstars, flat out.
Fair enough. We'll have to see. Like, I got the flag planted, so I got to ride down with the ship at this point.
I don't think it's wild. I just, even with the Nets second unit messing around trying to play defense? Oh, man. They try to play a little defense. That's cute. I don't know, Nikias. That's Yeah, I think it's a Nets to lose.
Fair enough. We'll go out west. Who do you have coming out right now?
I'm so sad about Jamal Murray.
Yeah. Mm, terrible.
So sad. I got the healthy Lakers coming out.
Ooh.
Like, I just, now, if they're not healthy, then I, that changes. I like healthy as in both KD, both LeBron and AD. I really like the way the Clippers are playing as of late. And the other day, I actually had to talk about this on SportsCenter. I think that they probably will take that second spot just because the Suns' schedule is about to be a beast down the stretch. Like, they got a six-game road trip with all the top teams in the East, I believe. And they wrap up with the Knicks, who are one of the better defensive teams in the East. So you can't even really take that for granted at the end of your road trip. The Clippers got to be there both mentally and physically, and I don't know that they always are. I don't think that Ty Lue is a better coach than Doc Rivers, so what really is the difference? Montrezl Harrell makes that much of a difference? Like, Lou Williams gone makes that much of a difference? I'm not sold. But for as exciting as the new blood has been in the West, they ain't ready to take over the King yet. The Jazz, the Nuggets. If the Nuggets do something spectacular and manage to finish top four in my mind, and Ryan Holland said top three to me, then I think you got to give Joker your MVP. But the Sun, like, they're just not ready yet in my mind.
Utah or Phoenix, which one do you trust more?
I'm sneaky. I think I actually trust Phoenix a little bit more. Just a little bit. Here's my thing. And I love this ascent and being able to talk to strangers on Twitter and be like, wait a minute, well, let's talk about this. let's talk about it. I said on the jump, and exposed is aggressive, but I said that when Rudy Gobert is pulled away from the rim, like, to me, the defense is, you know what I'm saying, not this historically great, efficient defense, to me. Because I've seen it too many times in small, yes, it's been in small sample sizes, but when you get to the playoffs, you're going to see elite teams seven games potentially. So if this is the crack, they're going to exploit it. So this fam is like giving me all these numbers. For the record, I'm not a numbers person. Like, I'm very much an eye test. What did the game actually say? I don't care about your 81.5, whatever efficiency. Like, get out of here. And then he's like, Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton. Like, he's Chris Paul's a Hall of Famer. Dude, when you get to the playoffs, you're not playing scrubs no more. So to me, when it becomes a lineup mismatch, when Rudy Gobert has to guard a small, like, he's, that's just not going to work. When he can't protect the rim because they put somebody in the dunker spot, like, nope, they're exposed, right? Now, offensively, sure, they got plenty of firepower. But Ingles, Bogdanovich, those guys, like, the foot speed to me is not there to counter healthy Lakers, healthy Clippers. They would literally have to shoot the lights out of the gym and hope the other team is cold, in my mind, to get out of a seven-game series. Do I think it could be entertaining? Do I think it could be compelling? Yeah. Am I putting my money on them at the end? No.
Strong case. Steve, where are you at on Utah and Phoenix at this point? I think we've talked about this on a prior episode.
I'd like them both. If I had to pick one right now, I'd probably go Utah just because of the way they play. Their style, shooting threes, moving the ball, punishing you when you get in rotation, just making you look silly at all times. So I probably trust them more. But Phoenix, they have the lineup versatility. They mm-hmm. have the ability to play on both ends. Mm-hmm. They're able to play half-court pace slower to where those are things that translate to the playoffs. The more I watch
Phoenix, Steve. Just talk about that defense on the low. Just go ahead and say it. They have the ability to match up defensively.
No, they're great. They don't get enough respect for their help defense. So mm-hmm. you could see either way. You know, if Utah shoots the lights out of it, they probably make that run. If Phoenix is able to get those matchups and defend and slow the game down, they make their run. It'll just be interesting to see where the Clippers and Lakers fall, because Utah could do all this work
yeah.
and then end up playing one of those two teams in the second round.
Yeah.
So
No, that's real. And I will say, all things considered, if you look at these two teams, and I guess technically, does Mike Conley technically have almost the same amount of experience in the playoffs as Chris Paul? He might.
It's close.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Right. All things considered, if you look at these teams in terms of the experience factor, I just give a little bit of edge to the team that has CP3, because look at what he did last year with OKC.
I'm with Phoenix.
Yeah.
I still have questions about, as great as Utah's defense is, well, as great as their offense is, I should say, I still worry about them against switching.
Like, I think against what?
Against switching.
Switching
yeah. defense, okay. yeah. Mm-hmm. Because if you're playing drop against them and they're able to create those advantages, then they spray it all over the lot. Like, this is something that Steve has talked about all year long. He really enjoys watching Utah. But you're able to switch and kind of close off some of those openings. Your ISO guys are Mitchell and who?
Conley.
I'm going to hit this stop. I'm going to hit this button if you disrespect Mike Conley.
I'm not going to disrespect Mike Conley. I think that's a lot of...
Steve! Come back! I was asking.
Like, I mean, that's... I just feel like that's... I mean, it's a lot of burden on Mike Conley. It's
kind
of
controversial. And I think that's a great point. And I think you're looking at that on the offensive end. I'm looking at it on the defensive end. Them wings... like, if somebody got to get stuck on an island and defend, other than Donovan Mitchell, crickets. Like, and don't get me wrong, I love some three-point shooting. I love some beautiful passing. But foot speed matters. Crickets.
So y'all are all out on the Jazz.
Not all out, but I just think that the statistics aren't necessarily going to bear out the success that we think. You know what I mean? Like, and listen, they're doing... freaky stuff. Like, I love it. It's beautiful basketball. Pull it up with your niece and nephew that's learning how to play the game. It's lovely. But we know that this league is really driven by stars. And Donovan, to me, has not necessarily eclipsed that point. I think he can and he will. But ain't nobody hollering about how balanced teams are when the game's on the line. Like, who's your killer? Like, who's your stopper?
I think Phoenix got the juice. Honestly, at this point, I think if the Lakers aren't healthy, I'm growing on Phoenix as a dark horse.
I'm really
growing on Phoenix to get out.
You're on the Phoenix train.
I am on the Phoenix train.
Okay.
I might buy some stock in that. Wait, do you guys think it's a wrap for the Nuggets? Like, it's a done deal?
Playoff wise, yes.
Okay.
I think they're gonna scrap. They're gonna play hard. They're gonna get some wins. I don't like their matchups unless they play Portland.
Well, we haven't even talked about Portland.
I don't know if there's much to say about Portland, to be honest with you.
No? They are what they are? Stuck at, what are they, six right now?
Like, Dame is great. CJ's great. The defense is, like, historically bad. Like, I don't need to see... I don't know if I need to see anything else.
I can't wait till Portland wins game one of whatever series they're in. And I bring this back up.
Oh, of course. We're going to get like 48 from Dame or something.
Something wild.
They're going to hit me with the big mad hashtag.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
going to be a whole it's going to be a whole thing. But Monica McNutt, thank you so much for your time. Where can the people find you?
Socials, last name, first name, McNutt Monica. What I got this week? Tomorrow I'm kicking it with Shanae and Gold Jr. filling in for the great Shanae Agumake, 4-7 ESPN Radio. Tuesday I'll be on the jump.
Nice.
Wednesday I got Around the Horn.
Everywhere on ESPN.
You know, they need to run me my money and give me all this rookie deal.
I know that's right. Thank you for joining us.
thanks for having me, guys. This was fun.
Thanks for joining us.